Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Caregiving for individuals with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia can become the responsibility of family members and can present a plethora of medical, legal, logistical, economic, and emotional challenges. What can one woman's personal experience tell us about the journey and struggles of becoming a full-time caregiver for a loved one with dementia, and what happens when you have to become your parent's parent? We're joined by Kitty Isley. She is an NPR journalist and host of Demented, a new Texas Public Radio podcast documenting her experience. And Kitty, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our phone lines are open. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're really interested in hearing your stories and your experience about what it was like for you, or what are your concerns and worries. We're not really being able to answer your questions. We're just able to share stories, which I think is extremely important so that you know that you're not alone. And so, Kitty, congratulations on dropping of the episodes of Demented today. It's on our website at tpr.org. Also, the new podcast, Demented, is supported by the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio and its Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases. So Kitty, when you let's start off with a clip from the podcast so we can get an idea of what we're dealing with here. Let's give a listen.
Okay, Ernest Hemingway, here's your mug that says Ernest Hemingway on it.
Okay, good.
That's my dad, Al.
So Ernest Hemingway had a beard like yours. Now you don't have it anymore.
No.
This is a recording I made in the fall of 2020. It's a pretty typical day. My dad and I have a morning routine. He wakes up, and I bring him the crossword and coffee in his favorite Ernest Hemingway mug. I get ready for my day, and then check back to make sure he ate something.
What'd you have for breakfast?
I had oats.
Toast?
I had toast, yeah.
Eggs?
Yep, eggs too.
My dad used to be able to do all of that on his own, but he can't do that now. So I'm doing it for him.
Be sure to drink your Ensure, and I'll make you a milkshake later.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Every week, I discover something I don't know how to do. A new responsibility or a task I have to figure out. There are so many things that slip when you're unable to take care of yourself.
Kitty, your topic, you know, either we've gone through this, we're going to go through it, we don't want to admit it, or we're going through it now. Lots of people have an entry point into this story. So what brought you to it?
Well, honestly, I'm a longtime journalist. My dad was a longtime journalist in Washington, D.C., and my grandparents, his parents, wrote about their lives as small-town farmers. So for me to start thinking about this as something I had to write about was natural, but it was also a way of processing all of this confusion I had when I ended up kind of taking over his care. And lots of things happened slowly and then all at once. And I ended up moving into my childhood home about 3.5 years ago because he was no longer able to take care of himself. And he had spent a few months in an assisted living place, and he was just miserable. And it was no fault of the place, but he'd lived in his house for 50-some years, and my mom had died recently, and I think it was just too disruptive. And at the time, my dad had, and for a long time, had congestive heart failure that led to a lot of cognitive loss, which in, you know, framing it as dementia is accurate. There are lots of kinds of dementia, not just Alzheimer's. And we didn't think he had a lot of time left. So I thought, you know, what makes him happy and what keeps him safe? And at the time, it was staying in his house. And he ended up living another 3 years, but it took a lot of work to keep him safe and happy. And I was really glad to do it, but I was so confused and emotionally pretty challenged by all of it.
There's a lot expected of the caregiver. You have to become an expert in a lot of areas and where the stakes are so high. And did you find that information that you needed that should have been more readily available wasn't there?
There are lots of ways to get information online, but you don't even know what you don't know. So just beginning to look at how do I find support in my community, the Area Association on Aging, most states, most communities have something like that. Those will help be a resource. But the clip you just played is from an episode about how I had to learn to give him a shave. And that's the last thing I ever expected to be doing. But he got to a point where he couldn't balance safely at the sink. He couldn't give himself a shave. He was feeling pretty grizzled and grumpy and unhappy with the way he looked just because it, you know, didn't feel like him. And this originated in a hospital where we didn't have access to get him. As I said, he couldn't stand up. And my sister and I tried to give him a shave while he was bedbound. And it was a mess. We spilled water and shaving cream and everything all over. And the last thing you think you're going to be doing is giving your parent a shave.
Believe I have a clip I want to play for that to help us get a better understanding.
Yeah.
I don't know when the last time you shaved was. Do you remember?
No, I don't.
You have a lot of whiskers, so we'll see if this works. A little more gel on your face. Let's just see how that goes. Hey, that's not bad. Wow. That's not bad at all. It's not perfect, but it's sure not bad. Good job, Dad. Wow. That looks better.
Yeah.
Does it feel better?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yes.
Your skin feels good. It feels soft.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't feel like you have the skin problem. At least I can't cut you with this.
Mm.
How does that feel to you?
Okay. Good.
Well, you'd do a better job yourself.
Yeah.
All right. That's as good as it's going to get. Would you do it again?
Sure.
About. Does it feel strange not to be able to shave yourself?
Yeah. It does. It does feel strange.
So that was actually kind of successful with this Gillette razor. He wasn't too unhappy. So I consider it a success. But it's a small victory.
So, Kitty, that was with a different kind of razor. And but the whole idea of shaving, not being able to shave yourself, that is, you know, it's, being a man is being able to shave.
Right. And that's a stand-in for so many things that often, either because of dementia or other physical incapacity, can happen as we get older. And the thing I would love for people to weigh in on, there are a couple of things that are happening. Americans are living longer with more complex conditions. So it's more frequent that someone like my dad would have small motor skill problems, not be able to button their shirt, for example. Or in his case, he could no longer use a pull tab on a can of beer or a Diet Coke. And I would come out in the dining room and he'd be stabbing a Coke can with a pen or a screwdriver. And it never occurred to me that he just physically couldn't lift that little tab anymore. His small motor skills weren't working. So things like that are happening to more people who are living longer. And they have smaller families. All of us, most of us have smaller families than 50, 60 years ago. Many of us are much more geographically dispersed. So many of the people I talk to are trying to provide care long distance to a parent or an in-law or a sibling. And there are fewer people we can hire, caregivers in the pipeline, to give us some help. And I will make a note for people listening just so you don't feel alone, because I really did feel alone. There are close to 1 in 5 Americans is giving unpaid care to another adult with health or functional needs. And that can be as simple as taking them to doctor's appointments or making meals for them, to as complex as it ended up in our situation, helping my dad move around the house when he could no longer walk, lifting him, getting his blood orders taken care of, doing his blood work every week. I had to do these funny little stick pin things, communicating with his doctors and his financial people, his banks, so that I could sign checks for him and take care of his accounts and make sure that we could pay what we needed to. Also, social life was a big deal for us. Like, my dad used to be a very social guy, and even before COVID, that dropped off as he became more isolated, and I became more isolated too. So I kept thinking, how can I cheer him up and keep him engaged with his friends? I think you just heard on that tape, you know, he's kind of monosyllabic. He's just kind of answering yes, yes, yes. He kind of became that way where he followed a conversation, but he couldn't really participate. And it made him reluctant to go out and see the people that he used to socialize with. And I heard that again and again from other people I talked to that just keeping their parents active and connected was a lot of work. And you kind of have to explain to people, you know, he's not quite the same guy you might remember. The same guy is still there. It's just under a bigger surface. And can you still be his friend and accept him now with some different limitations, but still be in his life? And I felt like I had to be very protective of him, as old friends would check in and wonder why he couldn't just drive downtown and meet them for a drink or for dinner. So that was something I felt like I ended up kind of inheriting, like a babysitter almost, or a parent, really. It was like being a parent and sometimes arranging something, I don't want to be condescending, but almost like play dates, so that he would stay connected. But I had to really set the tone for people to say, look, I know he was your friend, and 5 years ago, you guys would have gone out on your own and played tennis, but he can't do that, and I want to keep his friends around. And can you please just bear with us, because things are changing?
Yeah, in my own circumstances with my father, doing things like that, it was a long goodbye, an opportunity to get close to him that I had never felt before in my life. And we'll talk more about that and other questions that our listeners have when we come back. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about our new TPR podcast, Demented. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about TPR's new podcast, Demented. It's supported by the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio and its Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases. We're joined by the writer and host of the podcast, Kitty Isley. And I have a caller. Let's get a caller on the air, and Mark. And hey, Mark, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
My mother just moved in with my grandmother, who's showing early signs of dementia, short-term memory loss and eroding of her long-term memory. And my mother is relatively young, in her late 50s. And it just seems that as we both venture into this new stage of care with my grandmother, it's testing everybody's patience. So I was just wondering, in your experience, what are some of the best kind of practices for keeping a level head when dealing with a stubborn and challenging person with early on signs of dementia?
Mark, thank you so much for that call. Kitty?
That's such a great question. And keeping your patience testing your patience is such a great way to put it. And I feel for him, Mark and his family, because that happens. Your patience is tested almost hourly sometimes. I had trouble with that. And I think the biggest thing I could think of was, I'm doing my best, because I really like and love my dad. And if there was a better way to do it, we probably would have found it. We've gone in every direction we could. So for Mark's family, if the best thing they can do for his grandmother is have his mom stay with her, then the best thing Mark's family can do is help out the mom, because it's really hard to even arrange a break sometimes if somebody, let's say, gets up and walks when they shouldn't. That frequently happened with my dad when he would go to bed. He would get up in the middle of the night. In some cases, his middle of the night would be 9 p.m., start walking around the house and fall. So for me to take a break that night and go to the movies, I'd have to make sure someone could back me up. So that was one way of keeping my patience intact, was trying to schedule time away. And your patience will be tested. But the thing is, there's not like a right answer. You do the best you can. And for my part, I felt like I never wanted my dad to feel like he was a burden, but I could tell my emotional response sometimes with communicating that. So maybe stepping away and also reminding yourself, like, this person did all this stuff for you when you were a baby, but it's not the same thing when you're taking care of a 180-pound adult. So no wonder your patience is getting tested. You know, you can lift a toddler and get him into a car seat, but when you have an adult who can't stand on their feet, one person lifting them is very hard. And so it isn't surprising that your patients will get tested. My dad lost not one, not two, but three iPhones iPhones are not cheap. But he would keep calling his computer fixer person and say, I think I lost this. And she'd buy one for him and bill him. And I thought, he can't even remember his password. Why does he bother with an iPhone? This is a very, very pricey problem to have. That's the kind of impatience I would have, and I'd have to say, wait a minute, you know, he's not used to being bossed around by his daughter. And we had to have those conversations a little bit, frankly, and I had to really force myself to say, this is new to him, too. He's not used to this, and he doesn't even necessarily recognize some of his own cognitive limitations.
Let's play another clip. It kind of goes along those lines. This is, I think it's with Kim Morris, Shouldering Responsibilities.
Well, let me ask about that. Did you have other siblings?
Yes, I'm the last of seven.
Oh, wow. So that's what I wanted to ask about in terms of how you kind of identified as the person who would become her primary caregiver.
Complex family dynamics have a lot to do with it, and it mm-hmm. has just been me. I hate to sound like the martyr here. I really don't like that. Yeah, but it definitely was a choice. You know, I was single for a long time. I mean, I've only been married. My husband and I just passed our 2-year anniversary a couple of weeks ago. So I married much later. And my siblings, you know, they had families and lives and, you know, certainly chose to make that a priority over mom's care. So, yes, it fell to me because I was the one without a spouse, without kids.
Do you have any help for you, or is part of the daytime care where she goes somewhere and you get a little bit of respite, or they can take care of some of those things?
Yeah, I have in-home help now because,
okay,
honestly, Kitty, I would lose my mind if I couldn't step away for a few hours, a few days a week. Mm-hmm. So about 4 days a week, I have someone who comes in for a few hours, and it just gives me that.
That gives you an idea what the podcast is like. We're hearing from people discussing their experiences as a caregiver for their parents as they deal with dementia. And this is actually a experience more common than you would probably know unless you've actually gone through it. I do want to get another caller on the air before we run out of time. We have Jesus. And Jesus, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I took care of my mom for 18 years with Alzheimer's. And I'm breaking up because of it. But I did want to say that I had help from a lot of ladies who were immigrants from Mexico and South America, but many of them were illegal. And if it wasn't for them, I don't know what I would have done. So my question is, have we ever thought of thinking of a pathway to citizenship for some of these ladies who come in? They come from a culture that is very nurturing and caring. And I could not just find that with regular people here in San Antonio to do that. But these people would go out of their way, these ladies, to help me with my mom. So my question is, has the government ever looked at something like that?
All right, Jesus, thank you for the call. Katie Isley, well, one point about the caller from Jesus is that we have a lot of individuals, mainly women, who are doing this caregiving, and they are saving the government a lot of money by doing that. Otherwise, these individuals would be getting government assistance at a facility or something. Is there some way to balance that out?
I don't know about a path to citizenship, but what a great idea. What a fabulous idea. Jesus raises the part of our next season that we're already work on. The majority of people who do caregiving as work for pay are women and women of color, and they are underpaid to a phenomenal extent. They're paid less than somebody who works at Chipotle. To lift and bathe and help dress and help move and help go to the bathroom, somebody who outweighs them by 60 pounds several times a day, or they have several clients a day. We had a woman from El Salvador originally who had become a citizen after caring for a family friend that we hired to come in the beginning kind of part-time with my dad. But it is absolutely clear our system would collapse without immigrants. We have outsourced that care because, again, one-on-one, one person isn't enough to take care of one fully grown adult who is losing their capacities. So we had one hospital experience where I don't think one person we dealt with had been born in this country. And that's in suburban Washington, D.C. So that tells you we are entirely dependent on people coming and willing to do this kind of hard work. And we need to make sure they're well paid and they're safe, because a lot of this is physically very taxing.
Okay, I'm going to get another caller because we're short on time. Kathy, you're on the air. Kathy, go right ahead.
Okay, let me turn my car off. My father had Alzheimer's, early stages. He could not speak very well, and we didn't quite know what to do with him. And when my mother was being taken up to church by my husband, who was Catholic, I thought, why don't I take Daddy to his old church that he knew as a young man in South Texas. It was Missouri Synod. I started taking him to that church while the other two went off the other way. And by golly, I found out he knew how to sing. He couldn't talk, but by golly, he could still sing all those beautiful hymns in harmony. And it's amazing what those memories are.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for that anecdote and that story about your dad. So Kitty, what are the big takeaways that you have from this experience and then producing this podcast?
Well, first of all, the podcasts are really small, intimate conversations with people I already knew, because I was kind of at my wit's end doing this, and I was looking for advice. So these are really personal conversations with people that were my friends or colleagues. The next season we're working on, we're really trying to get to a much wider group of people, because there are almost 50 million now, 50 million people in America going through this. And much of it is behind your house, it's closed door, or in a facility. So we don't see it the same way we might see childcare needs. I think the things, I wrote down a few things that helped me, and these are really practical, but as this started, this experience started with parents who both fell, I got to know their neighbors, and I made sure I had telephones and emails for the people that lived near their house. And I got to know their physicians. So I started kind of keeping a list of people who I could call on, because I wouldn't have known those people. And over time, I would take my parents to the doctor and make sure the doctor knew who I was. And I ended up getting, you know, the legal right to be able to know their health status and help make decisions for them. So the first thing is to make sure if you can, you know, repair or have a good relationship with your loved ones, to make sure you know who somebody is that you can call in an emergency to check in on them, somebody you can call to help you. I think knowing if you have a key to the house. I didn't have a key to their house. I knew where they hid one. Knowing if they have a will, that's a biggie. Social Security number helped me, because I had to often fill out forms for them and make sure that their insurance was listed. Those are small, practical things. The bigger thing, I would encourage everyone, because often this comes up at holidays because you're going to see your parents. Sounds like we're out of time, but start this conversation soon. This holiday, ask how they want to be cared for if something happened.
Kitty Eisele is an NPR journalist, host of the Demented podcast. The new season dropped today on Texas Public Radio. This TPR podcast is supported by the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio and its Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases. Kitty Eisele, it's great talking with you.
Thanks so much. Look forward to more.
Absolutely. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaoweng Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.